Dave, are you there? Can you ping him in any way?
No. Dave? I don't know, we're still on. Dave, are you there? Are you there?
Well, let's proceed. Maybe you can call him.
Yeah, I will email him.
So welcome back. We need to proceed. Of course, we have a busy agenda for the entire day, so we need to keep moving. The next item on this morning's agenda is the FRUP program and proposed legislation. Mary? And Mark, obviously. Eminem.
Good morning, Commissioner, members of the board. Again, I'm Mark Engel, and with me is Mary McDonald. Mary is going to give the presentation on the required FRUP report that we gave to both the legislature and OFM. I'll be here in the event that questions come up after the presentation.
All right. Thank you.
Hey, good morning, members of the board again, and Commissioner. You were given the legislative report in the packet that is under Mark Engel. I'm going to go over everything pretty briefly, and please don't hesitate to stop me and ask me questions. Legislature created the Forest Riparian Easement Program, FREP, in 1999 to help offset the diminishing economic viability of small forest landowners from the increasing regulatory requirements per RCW 7613-100. FREP purchases 50-year conservation easements along riparian areas from small forest landowners that provide riparian protection according to the forest practice rules. Since 2001, we have purchased over 278 easements for more than 4,300 riparian acres. The Department of Natural Resources recently submitted a state building capital account proposal for $10 million to pay off or to purchase the conservation easements that are currently in the backlog from FRUP applications. The supplemental capital budget for 2010 required DNR to perform two directives and deliverables. They directed DNR to do two deliverables. The first deliverable was to acquire riparian easements according to a new criteria of 14 prioritization elements that they gave us. The second was, according to the budget proviso, to prepare recommendations for FRUP reform. The recommendations were to be delivered to the Department of Office or the Office of Financial Management and the legislature by October 1st. The first deliverable, or I'm going to focus on the second deliverable first, and that was the recommendations that we put forward to the legislature. They asked for to clarify eligibility provisions and a prioritization criteria and to assure funding for the highest priority easements. And of course, this was also to be accomplished working with interested stakeholders. So in order to do this, what we first set out doing is we sent an email and a letter to over 30 diverse stakeholders and asked them to provide input on our recommendations. We had three public open house meetings, one in Spokane, Centralia, and Olympia. And in each of those, we provided draft recommendations so that we would have a productive meeting and to solicit feedback. During these 2 months, we received over 154 comments. All these comments we tracked and then provided that information back to anybody who was interested in receiving them, and they are on our website. And they were also part of the legislative report. The overwhelming response from small forest landowners and interested parties was not to add additional prioritization or eligible criteria to the FRUP program. In our recommendations, what we did is we took the input that we received from these stakeholders, and then we also looked at the experience that we had had as far as for implementing FRET for the last 9 years. And then also looked at the intent that they gave us at RCW 7613-100. The final recommendations from DNR were to be in legislative form. So I'm just going to go over a quick summary of what those were. Okay. We added the eligibility requirement for an applicant to have legal majority ownership of the land associated with the easement prior to July 1st, 2011. This would be if this were to move forward, if the recommendations were enacted. Another eligibility requirement was that an applicant is to have no outstanding forest practice violations. And another one would be that we would check the applicant's status of a small forest landowner at the time that the easement acquisition took place.
You're saying to verify that they are a small forest landowner.
Yeah, that's correct. Not just at the time that they put in an application,
but
at the time of acquisition. We were going to amend qualifying timber requirements. Qualifying timber is the timber that is assessed and assigned a value, and then that helps us determine the compensation offer of a landowner. So qualifying timber would include riparian areas, channel migration areas, and areas of uneconomic harvest due to the forest and fish rules. But it would not include unstable slope areas outside of the riparian areas or outside of the channel migration zone. We would also exclude trees that have an existing harvest restriction from a conservation easement already on the application area. A prioritization element that we proposed would be that we would help, that would prioritize an application if a small landowner had a long-term forest stewardship plan on the property that was recognized by the department. The things that we proposed as far as to recommend efficiencies and how we implement the acquisitions had to do with we would initiate a cruise contract, which hasn't, we have a WAC that doesn't let us move forward with that until we know that we have funding to do that. We would initiate cruise contracts and establish a dollar value upon receipt of the notification that they are completed with harvest. These recommendations went forward to the legislature and to the Office of Financial Management. We believe that we took into consideration the feedback from interested stakeholders, recommendations from our staff, and took into consideration also the legislation, the legislative proviso language in 2010 budget. That's what the legislature asked us to do. The other, so that's the recommendation. I'm going to jump up and give you the next deliverable that they told us that we had to do regarding the budget proviso. So we considered prioritization elements that they gave us for recommendations, but then also they told us that this is the 14 elements that they asked us to implement with the $1,100,000. We got an additional $600,000, or I think it was $500,000 with the sale of the DNR airplane King Air. So we ended up with a total budget to acquire easements for this year of $1,100,000. With that, we're moving forward with those budget We had to, they gave us 14 elements that we needed to ask for additional information. These were new prioritization elements, so we didn't have that information from the applicants. When we sent out information asking the applicants for this information for us to prioritize according to the what the proviso language asked us to do, we received over 90% response from the applicants. So we got a very high turn back with the information. We're in the process of acquiring these easements. We've recently hired a temporary staff and to proceed with these easement acquisitions. I guess I just wanted to make one more point that these prioritization elements that were listed in the proviso language will sunset in July of 2011 with the appropriation. That is a lot of information, and I really know it to the letter, so I probably jumped around a little bit, but I'm certainly open for any questions.
And thank you, Mary. The only thing I would add is that staff has worked really hard on the outreach component of this. You heard her describe the three meetings, and the staff was there. It was an interactive conversation, and there was a lot of listening. Sherry.
Thank you, Commissioner. Mary, obviously, this was one of the most important things that occurred in Forest and Fish for the small forest landowners. And so there's a lot of concern, obviously, about the pretty sizable reformation of how this program is going to work. My question is, did this happen to go to policy for their input? I know you did the stakeholder stuff, but, you know, like we talked about during Rex's presentation, policy input is the process we follow. And was that process followed?
It did not go to Forest and Fish policy for approval. It did go to Forest and Fish policy for information and update. And then I can affirm that all of the normal policy members were asked and sent an invitation to come to the open public meetings, and were asked any kind of input that we received from each of those caucuses was received. So each of the caucuses and members of policy were specifically asked for input.
Seems rather precedent-setting, still though, that it did not come before a regular meeting, a Forest and Fish policy. Historical, when we've had legislation for small landowners passed, then that legislation got taken to Forest and Fish policy to negotiate, you know, the details of what we thought legislators told us to do. So I'm concerned about the fact that we changed our process and our structure somewhat, and it could be problematic in the future.
Sherry, I'd just point out the obvious. We were under a very, very short timeline here. And we had, this report was due back to the legislature on which date?
October 1st, we had 2 months.
So, you know, I think your suggestion is well thought. However, we know that policy doesn't necessarily address everything right away, and it can be a prolonged conversation. And we were under a strict legislative mandate to return the recommendation.
Yeah, Commissioner, but don't you think it could have been given to one particular meeting, telling the different caucuses you've got a week turnaround to get your comments back as far as policy recommendations?
Perhaps.
Mark? If I may, we were following the direction given to us through the budget proviso in the capital budget, which directed DNR to talk with stakeholders or collect stakeholder comment regarding the 14 elements that they listed within the budget proviso. The legislature intended us to use those as kind of the basis from which we would determine FRET reform. And so we wanted to reach out to that community that would be most affected by these changes. And again, as Mary said, all of policy was invited to attend the three open house meetings that we had, and many policy did attend, but the primary focus was on small forest landowner community and getting their read on FRET reform.
I just want to reinforce, Mark, though, Forested Fish has an adaptive management program that's very specific about how rule changes should occur.
Yes, that's true. But we implement rule in one of three ways, and that'd be as a result of the legislature, the courts, or adaptive management. In this case, we took the budget proviso as a lead from the legislature. So we're meeting their request, and as Mary's pointed out, a very short timeline, a two-month operating window in order to collect the comments and then prepare the final report for the legislature and all fed.
Darren, did you have something?
Yes, I wanted to add to that. Up to this point, the practice of the program has to not take rule revision proposals through the adaptive management process that do not affect resource protection standards. And that's the case with FRET.
True, too.
Okay, might ought to document that.
Well, so the adaptive management process is primarily set up to determine if the rules meet performance targets for resource protection.
Not necessarily on the policy track.
Right, but that's the primary underpinning of the adaptive management program is just that. Are we meeting the resource protection targets that we've established? So the department's interpretation of that up to this point has been when we have a rule proposal that does not affect resource protection standards, we don't run it through a formal adaptive management process. We certainly inform everyone, and the same players are involved in the stakeholder process, but we don't run that through the formal adaptive management process.
Well, that clarifies.
Yeah.
Thank you, Darren.
And as a confirmation of that, the riparian open space rulemaking, mm-hmm. we did not run that through adaptive management either because that is a conservation easement program. It does not affect any of the protections that landowners are required to leave for that program. So this is just a rulemaking to establish the manner in which conservation easements may be granted for those areas that landowners have to leave under the forest practices rules. So I thank you, Darren, for reminding me of that. So, this is not changing the protective standards.
I guess what I add, it doesn't preclude the adaptive management program from taking on other things. It certainly doesn't do that, but our practices do not do that. Just recognizing what it has in front of it right now.
Other questions from the board?
I'm just thanks for the answers to Sherry, but what Sherry's question sort of brought together in my mind. I guess it's on my mind because of this morning's conversations, but if the small forest landowners are no longer a part of policy, is that correct? Is that what I understood in the testimony? So,
but that's by their own volition.
I understand that. But what it raises in my mind as I think about Sherry's question is that, I was thinking that it was something that I was sad to see happen before, but I've sort of elevated that in my thinking now to a question, which is it really, what does it really mean in terms of having a collaborative process throughout? And, does that raise it to sort of, I don't want to be dramatic, but closer to a fatal flaw in the process? I was going to do it anyway. But, what does that mean if we're going to go on? Because if we had run it by policy, the small forest landowners would not have been there.
Correct.
So so even if we had, it wouldn't have brought in all the participants that we've historically had in policy. You would have picked them up through a broader stakeholder involvement. So it wasn't that there was exclusion per se. But it's just raising some.
But Carolyn, for instance, I heard some comments from Miguel and also from Stephen Burnett about the FREP program that I think could have been very useful for a good discussion of forest and fish policy, which would have made this legislation or proposal better than what it is. To me, it has some flaws. It needed some discussion from the people that were involved in forest and fish at the beginning, like Mr. Bernath, that knew that we intended always to purchase unstable slopes that delivered, that had the potential to deliver to waters. That was always part of the deal. They would have had that background information.
Other questions from the board?
Yeah, my question to Mary is, there are parts of this that are objectionable to quite a few people. How do we deal with it now? What's the next step?
What it has been given to the legislature and to OFM, and what the legislature chooses to do with those recommendations is their decision.
It sounds to me like there wasn't the listening, all the listening that took place didn't get too far when I look at some of the things, didn't it? So, you know, back to the question that Carolyn rose, you know, small landowners, I think Commissioner has felt that their position that policy was token, pretty much. And that nothing was really gained there by us being there. I think that's the feeling. So, I mean, there is a real disconnect here. You hit it right on the head, Carolyn.
Well,
it's not good. I'll be the first to say it's not good.
I would agree, Doug. It's a real weakness of the system when any caucus walks.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be better for everyone, including the small forest landowners, if they were to return to the table. Well, thank you very much. Warren, do you have another question?
A comment that really builds on the other statements that have been made. I can certainly, we have heard the frustration that the small forest landowners have expressed over many, many meetings of not having their particular concerns addressed to their satisfaction. And on the side of the DNR, I can understand the requirement that the legislature gave you to respond in a two-month period of time. So it limits the at least the length of a discussion, if not the opportunity for full collaboration on finding a solution. I'm concerned, even given those limitations, that the recommendation that comes forward seems to be in opposition to the majority or overwhelming stakeholder response, as it was stated here, was of a different opinion than that which is coming forward in the recommendation to, or the recommended legislation back to the legislature. So that certainly is a concern. You know, it doesn't appear that it's a Forest Practices Board opportunity for us to change this in any way. And so I guess it leaves it up to us individually if we want to support or not support the way this is moving forward. But it certainly is a concern and definitely continues to illustrate the sometimes lack of or inability to get collaboration when we really seek it.
Well, Mark, would you have any further detail for the board on what you and staff did in terms of listening carefully and responding to their requests? I mean, you have to understand what the list was that we were given by OFM and by the legislature, and how we winnowed that down to the existence, the ones that went forward.
I would say that at least, and this is from my perspective, that we listened to and read all of those 154 comments from the stakeholders, and the only prioritization that we put forward was if an applicant has a long-term stewardship plan, that was the only prioritization, as opposed to what the legislature in the budget proviso gave us 14. I think also that when we looked at the history of how we have seen quite a few applicants come forward over the last 9 years, our recommendations to exclude certain types of outside of the riparian buffer, we considered it a forest riparian easement program, not necessarily the area outside of it. And we had comments going both ways that were to include the unstable soils and also to exclude when we saw a disproportionate amount of money going from the program into parcels of property that were largely unstable prior to the forest and fish. And we looked at the intent of the legislation that said that it was focused on the forest and fish economic impact to small landowners. We also looked at not bringing forward any pre-existing nonprofit as far as pulling that out. We discarded that. We had comments on both sides. If we received comments on both sides, at one point I think we had to make a decision whether to bring it forward or not. And so that's when we started to look at how we've implemented the program.
So perhaps, thank you for that. Perhaps one last question, and maybe you don't have the data here right now, but you were pretty good about listing the number of FREPs that we have been granted since the initiation. You didn't include the dollar amount.
$26 million, over $26 million since 2001.
All right, thank you for that. Darren?
Yes, so I just add one thing. Board Member Stinson asked, what's the next step? We have heard that there is a work session, House Ag Natural Resources work session on December 10th in the afternoon, and we expect this topic will come up during that work session. We've been asked to come and participate.
All right. Thank you. So moving on this morning's agenda, and thank you again for that discussion. Is it Administrative Appeals Expedited Rulemaking? Good morning, Gretchen.
Good morning, Commissioner Goldmark and all board members. I'm Gretchen Robinson, and I work in the Forest Practices Division of DNR, and I often put forward rulemaking steps for the board to make action on. Today I'm requesting that the board adopt rules that we have referred to as the Administrative Appeals Rules. They incorporate provisions of last year's natural resource reform legislation that reduce the number of state boards that conduct administrative review of environmental and land use decisions. The main effect on forest practices is that the legislation eliminated the Forest Practices Appeals Board and made DNR's decisions appealable to the Pollution Control Hearings Board. The rule proposal that I sent to you in your packet also provides information about the appeals process for the notice of conversion to a non-forestry use. And that was added to the Forest Practices Act in 2007. So this was an opportunity to include a process for appealing that notice also. And the packet also corrects a typographical error in WAC 2223023 involving an incorrect reference to another section in that WAC. At your August meeting, you directed staff to initiate the expedited rulemaking process for this rule package, and it qualified as expedited rulemaking because it simply incorporated statute and it corrected a typographical error. So that qualifies for a quicker rulemaking than usual. So we filed the rule language with the code revisor on September 15th, the language was published in the Washington State Register. And in expedited rulemaking,
Rules may be adopted if there are no written objections within 45 days of the date that the rules are published in the Washington State Register. And in this case, the deadline for comment was November 1st, and we did receive no comments. So I now request that you adopt the rules and direct staff to file a CR 103 rulemaking order with the Code Revisor's Office. Any questions?
Any questions on where we are on this? I think we all know we're moving to implement this on an expedited basis because it's supporting legislative action. Right? Are there any questions about what we're doing or why we need to move forward at this point? It's really rather straightforward. A motion would be appropriate.
I'll make the motion. Sorry, read it.
Please.
I move that the Forest Practices Board adopt the rule proposal that eliminates the Forest Practices Appeals Board and adds a definition for, quote, notice of a conversion to a non-forestry use, end quote. This rulemaking incorporates provisions of the 2010 Substitute House Bill 2935 and the 2007 Second Substitute Senate Bill 5883. I further move to direct staff to file this CR 103 rulemaking order with the Office of the Board Advisor.
Thank you. Is there a second for this?
Second.
All right. Thank you. Dave, are you with us there?
I am.
Okay. Are you properly informed?
I am.
All right.
Well, yeah, I think so.
All right. So we have a motion properly supported. Is there any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, I'll call for a vote. All those in favor, raise your hand, please.
Aye.
Dave, how do you vote?
Aye.
All right, thank you. It's unanimous. Thank you, Board, for that quick action on this relatively straightforward rulemaking. And thank you, Gretchen.
You're welcome.
Don't you wish all rulemaking was as simple? All right, so the next item on this morning's agenda is an opportunity for public comment on forest biomass rulemaking. And we have three individuals who signed up to comment. First is Carl Forsgaard. Morning, Carl.
Morning. Members of the board, good morning. I'm Carl Forsgaard, representing the Conservation Caucus. The Conservation Caucus supports staff's recommendation for the board to initiate 30-day review of rule language to add biomass removal to the definition of forest practice. We refer to this as phase one of biomass rulemaking. The DNR staff's October 19th memo refers to the view of some stakeholders, including us, that there's an urgent need to initiate a phase two of biomass rulemaking to address sustainable practices related to the harvest of biomass, such as what and how much should be left on the forest floor, and what methods of harvest and transport will protect soils and prevent public resource damage. Washington's existing forest practice laws and rules are designed around the activity of removing logs from the forest. They're not designed around removing whole trees or slash or other vegetation. And so the proposed new activity of biomass removal needs to be examined for ecological sustainability. And the existing rules and board manual do not comprehensively address that. So Washington is in a catch-up mode regarding best management practices here. Furthermore, the biomass industry is growing rapidly. DNR staff recently reported that biomass is now being harvested to a much greater degree than they had thought. And there's a wide divergence in how it's being addressed across different parts of DNR. And there are now five different biomass power plant proposals on the Olympic Peninsula alone that are going through the permitting process to start construction of these plants. And most everyone agrees that phase two of biomass rulemaking does need to be done, and it's just a question of when. To avoid unnecessary delay, we urge the board to issue a CR 101 today to start in phase two of biomass rulemaking. We don't know how long it will take us to develop rule language everyone can agree with, but let's at least start the dialogue. CR 101s don't expire, and they merely notify the public that the topic is under discussion, but it would also demonstrate board leadership on the issue and being proactive to convene the discussion. We're mindful of DNR staff's workload, but we do not believe issuing the CR 101 now would be too much of a burden on staff. It doesn't have to go into policy and adaptive management initially. The CR 101 for phase one had three stakeholder meetings and didn't go through policy for that. And we could at least start out with non-agency stakeholders doing the heavy lifting. The stakeholder meetings could be eased in while there's a winding down of the stakeholder meetings that have been taking place on other rulemakings that are now over the hump, such as RMAPs, watershed analysis, and phase one of biomass. Delaying a CR 101 up would be bad policy when we have a new biomass industry that's developing more rapidly than DNR staff thought. And those new businesses need to be realistically planning where their future fuel supply will come from. From a forestry standpoint, in what parts of the state do we want to encourage this emerging industry, and how much can they sustainably remove from those areas? Since forest conditions vary from site to site, biomass removal will affect different sites differently. The Forest Guild is developing guidelines aimed at ensuring the forest can support wildlife, maintain biodiversity, provide clean water, sequester carbon, protect forest soil productivity, and continue to produce income after a biomass harvest or repeated harvest. Now, phase two rulemaking on biomass is necessary and urgent. Again, the board should issue a CR1 now to start that process. Otherwise, the Conservation Caucus will need to take the precaution of filing a petition for rulemaking so that the process starts within a reasonable time. Thank you.
Thank you, Carl. Miguel?
Thank you, Commissioner, and members of the board. I just want to make a few additional comments on this topic. Regarding biomass, there's really it's a very controversial subject at the moment, as many of you know have been following the papers on this area, particularly locally here at the Norfolk Peninsula. And there's different policy issues associated. One is just the energy policy around whether or not we want to be developing new sources of combustion as we're trying to deal with climate change. The other, of course, is the health issues around particulates and health of families and children. But our concern, or our portal into this discussion, is about sustainability of the forest and the notion of harvesting previously non-merchantable material. So what is our concern? It's less about what's taken and more about what's left. Typically called coarse woody material, large, small woody material, fine woody material, identified by size class and tons per acre, is not identified currently in the forest practices law as a requirement to be left on the forest floor. Has not needed to be. Does it need to be now? Well, we have some time and some room while this industry is incubating. And it would make sense before it hatches, if you will, to develop these protocols, and that, you know, establish these protocols that relate to protecting public resources, soil, water, fish and wildlife. Yes, right now I think most of the harvest that's occurring is pretty much limited to write-off roads and slash piles. So again, I think that's, from our perspective, that's great. This is a good time then to identify how it should be done in a sustainable way. By the way, just looking at worldwide, it depending on the market, in England, for instance, they go as far as removing stumps. So it's not beyond reason to expect that it could go beyond what it is today. So, and I think more importantly, from a positive potential, I think a lot of us in the forest arena have been looking forward to biomass as a way to actually help strengthen our forests, particularly in eastern Washington. So I think it would help the industry for this board to send a signal as to what they can expect in terms of available resources. Right now, if you assume that you can vacuum the forest floor in Olympic Peninsula, then that's where you're going to locate your plants. I think, as a matter of public policy, directing that industry towards where it's most needed in terms of forest health issues, eastern Washington, that type of material right now that is not merchantable would make a lot of sense. And I think we could do that by establishing pretty strong regulatory guidance that limits the amount of forest floor material that is harvested and moves the industry towards practices that actually benefit the forest. And I just want to support the previous speaker, Carl's mentioned starting the CR 101 today. I think the board can do that. And I think that would make a lot of sense. Thank you.
Thank you, Miguel. Adrian Miller.
Good morning, Board. I'm Peter Miller, I represent the Washington Forest Protection Association. I guess I'll start off with a note of agreement that we certainly all here appreciate the work that's been done in making it clear that biomass harvest indeed is a regulated forest practice. But there's a lot of conversation about sort of what next. As this industry reemerges, and I say reemerge because it's been around a while. There have been lots of facilities out in the landscape utilizing biomass for both energy as well as for pulp and paper production. It does re-raise a lot of existing concerns, many of which are mentioned. In particular, the one that falls in this board's purview is sustainability. Bearing that in mind, and it is a legitimate concern, right now, as this industry reemerges, we do not need additional rulemaking, which would send a pretty dramatic signal to those that are considering reinvesting in this technology. And one of the other pieces that I think this board needs to be very cognizant of is the fact that there are a number of initiatives sponsored by the legislature, also sponsored by the governor's office, to facilitate the development of this industry. Right now, the biomass industry as we know it is relatively limited. Certainly it has room to grow, and we hope it does. And as it begins to grow, I think many of these issues can and should be addressed. I would simply argue that initiating rulemaking today or in the near future is not the appropriate way to address those issues. So I want to offer sort of three quick possibilities for the board to consider. DNR, the commissioner's leadership, is embarked on a biomass supply study. It's to look at sort of this sort of global picture of what's truly available. Lots of supply studies out there, but what I think makes this one unique is it brings in an environmental filter, if you will. It looks at not just what's out there and what could be cost effectively harvested, but potentially what is realistically expected if this industry is going to be a long-term industry. So I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe that study is due out within a six-month time window. So it's not like we're kicking the can down the road multiple years. There's existing information on the rate and level of biomass harvest. DNR doesn't need to go collect this information. The Department of Revenue is currently cataloging, as a result of the tax credits that the legislature has offered to facilitate the development of this industry, is tracking that volume and amount. Mm-hmm. And I think with a relatively little amount of work, cross-tabulating that with FPAs to get an idea of what the footprint of actual impact on the ground would really put this issue in perspective and allow, should this industry truly take off, would allow us time to initiate rulemaking if that indeed were necessary. And then lastly, what I think, before we run off to rulemaking, I think we're missing a great opportunity, not just to work with the forest landowner community, but to look at the facility operators that are working with this. These are huge capital investments, in excess of several tens of millions of dollars, and there are monies associated with those projects for environmental review. There are existing permitting processes, and I think we'd be remiss if we didn't look to those processes and those opportunities to perhaps come up with a way to cooperatively do the research that would be needed should a petition to the board be necessary. Because simply filing a petition, as you well know, isn't going to get you the rulemaking. It's got to be substantiated. And if it's substantiated, I think we could have a more cooperative environment moving forward than one that was getting the cart before the hovers. Happy to answer any questions? Paul. I'm sorry. I anticipated
it. I just wanted to ask about the perception that initiating rulemaking would send a negative signal to the industry, because I could also see it perceived as a way to try to get out in front of potential problems and support the development of the industry rather than leaving things in a somewhat unexamined, potentially data-free state of controversy. So I'm just tossing this out there as an alternate interpretation that it's possible that a well-done rulemaking process that took into account the information that DNR's report is going to put together could lead to protection of that nascent industry and allowing it to develop with very full stakeholder support rather than sort of chasing a problem. And I do understand the intent, and I appreciate your comments about maybe setting up some data collection and some monitoring information. I think we should do that regardless. But I just wanted to hear your perspective on why initiating rulemaking now would be a negative thing rather than a positive thing.
Right. Couple thoughts to that. I'm not a manufacturing person, so I'm going to go out on a limb, which is always dangerous. But my understanding of how facilities, get the capital to develop these projects, and B, in terms of how they look at it from a business planning perspective, actually tend to vastly overestimate, well, I shouldn't say overestimate, they need to have more material available than what they anticipate actually using. And so from a planning perspective, I think most of these folks are looking at this with a realistic lens. In terms of what the board signals in terms of their action, I tend to agree with you. I think if the sort of greater industry, and I include the manufacturers in that context, felt comfortable entering into a discussion around sustainability criteria, I think there's an opportunity to sort of bring them along and bring landowners along. But I don't believe that conversation's happened yet to any depth. And that, hitting the rulemaking process out of the gate as the trigger for that discussion from, I think, most manufacturers and certainly from WFPA's perspective, sets the wrong tone. So it's a subtlety issue here in terms of sort of, what's the scope, where are the areas of agreement? And when you have the hammer, quite seriously of rulemaking there, before that initial conversations happened, I think it makes a less constructive discussion. That fair answer?
Yes, Norm?
I'd like to just make a comment directly to Paula's question. When this agenda, Forest Practice Board meeting agenda came out, the representative from one of these facilities on the Olympic Peninsula, it's an existing facility actually that is looking to expand, not a new facility, called me directly, said, what's this all about? Is this a concern? Is this something we need to be aware of? They're looking at spending $20 million to expand their facility. Anything that is a regulation of their opportunity to utilize material is going to be seen as a negative. We don't pass regulations typically to make life better for our industries. They usually make things more restrictive, and that costs money, that makes less available resources for them. That's just the way that regulations work. So this was a concern. It was a very real concern brought to me. So this is not an unreal thing to expect to happen if the board signals that we're going to be looking at regulating in a further way biomass. Those that are considering building plants will be concerned. They've already expressed that.
Other, yes.
Just a question, probably both for Norm and for Adrian. So if we don't take the route of filing CR 101, which as we all know is just a very preliminary step saying we're thinking about it, what in your opinion would be a more amicable way to start this discussion, since everyone does seem to agree that what we're calling phase two is going to be where all the details are worked out, and that will be really important to not delay that conversation for too long, but would bringing this to policy be a better option in terms of industry, or is it just more of a, you're thinking more informal forums?
I think you could go either route. I mean, policy lends a degree of formality that has its pluses, but it's also I'll just leave it. What I would say is from certainly from WFPA's perspective, we would be willing to work with, you know, any interested party in furthering this conversation. What I would like to do, and perhaps maybe with Norm's and others' help, who have business relationships or potential business relationships with the manufacturing sector, bringing them into the discussion to me is sort of the real cornerstone. You know, potentially it may allow for better resolution of some of the other environmental issues that don't come before this board, such as particulates, such as human health concerns. So I think long term that might be a smarter play, but I'd certainly be willing to take the time and figure out a way to do that. Would respond to a strong urging from the board to get it done by a period of time if that's helpful.
So,
can I respond to this question?
Well, there are two discussions going on here. I'd like to keep it focused on the comments from the member of the public that's here. This is not the only opportunity to talk about this. We're going to come back to this issue. I just want to make sure we're in the public comment period here. That's all. Yes?
I'll reserve my discussion for the discussion
period. For the board discussion.
That's fine.
So, Adrian mentioned a study on the biomass supply study, and that he thought that it would be available in 6 months. So, can somebody give me a when that is?
Well, I was
sorry. I apologize if that's not correct. That was my understanding. I'm just in trouble now.
And thank you for that. I had not yet had an opportunity to inform this board that, in fact, we did, DNR did receive a grant from the Forest Service, and indeed we are on the cusp of establishing a contract with the University of Washington to do an all lands inventory of biomass availability across the state. So this is a very important study, and it's done carefully to make sure that those resources that are judged available are judged available from an economic and an ecological standpoint. So this is in contrast perhaps to the earlier study that was done in 05 by Ecology and WSU that was maybe a little bit less sensitive to that issue. And I will just remind the board that one of the reasons that this discussion is happening is that DNR and others, in the course of looking at lands that have been not only harvested for logs, but also been harvested for biomass, have seen a range of management activities out there. Some of them look quite acceptable, and some are quite alarming. So that is what has triggered this whole discussion, is what do we need to do thoughtfully from a public protection and resource issue about biomass. So, Adrian, thank you very much for your comments. And we have good sources, but I think the 6 months is perhaps a little ambitious. And if we can see this report by the middle of July 2011, I think that's when I would expect it. But we have employed a perhaps one of the best entities that's positioned well to do this study. The University of Washington is already currently doing a study on the Olympic Peninsula, and so it's quite possible that they're already well informed on the many issues that need to be in part of this inventory. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Fisher, I'm sorry, I forgot to sign up on the on the piece of paper. I signed up for watershed analysis and I forgot about the biomass.
So you wanted to comment?
Yes, please.
All right. Well, let's do it rapidly, please.
Peter Goldman, Washington Forest Law Center for the Cotton Conservation Caucus. I don't want to repeat some of the statements I've already made. I just have a few responses. First of all, the notion that there are investors coming here and willing to invest a lot of money, this is very important for the board to understand that a lot of this is being precipitated by the stimulus bill, which is providing millions, billions of dollars for biomass energy under the idea that it's carbon neutral and renewable. And so there's huge, huge amounts of stimulus money that is basically catalyzing these plants, these five plants that are slated for the state of Washington. So this is a freight train that was released in Washington, D.C. that's headed this way. So we're just standing on the tracks right now, just so it's not like we're discouraging local investors. The second point, this is a fundamental question of fairness to all landowners and sustainability, and we're trying to establish the baseline. I categorically reject the sort of notion that just because we're looking at something to protect it, we're sending a bad signal. I think Wall Street is the best example of what happened, and watershed analysis, what we're going to go into later. The EISs for these local plants are not addressing the impact on the forest. They're looking at air, traffic, those kinds of things that pertain to those local jurisdictions. They're not saying anything about the forest, but if they did, they'd say, well, that's the state's job. That's this board's job. We don't look at what the impact of our plant is on this county's forest. So that's this board's job. So it's very much this board's job. And I just want to say the CR 101 wouldn't send a signal that we're hostile to this. It says we want to get ahead of it. It would send a signal to the industry and us to sit down together and start looking through the best available science and figuring out what we need to do to baseline protect resources and dovetail it with the HCP. That's not a bad signal. It's that you're looking at it and you want us to get together. If you don't send that signal, then basically you're saying, okay guys, it's time for the environmental community to blow everything up and file something. We do have the option of filing a petition for rulemaking, which requires this board to address the issue within 60 days, which would be a special meeting. And that would mean you either initiate rulemaking, reject rulemaking, or say what you're going to do in light of initiating rulemaking. It would get adversarial. We don't want it to go there. And forest and fish is not where it belongs. They already have enough to do. The easiest path here is to send the signal that industry and we and all other stakeholders, tribes, everyone, I mean, has to sit down and figure out where we're going with this issue because this freight train is coming. Thank you.
So that completes the public comment on forest biomass rulemaking, setting the stage for our consideration of rulemaking at this time. Gretchen and Mark, and I will just remind the board that this is not about anything other than adding forest biomass as a forest practice.
Hello again, board members. Mark Engel and I will present this to you, the rulemaking at hand. We're here to request your approval to proceed with a 30-day review of the forest biomass draft rule proposal that I sent to you in your board packet. The 30-day review is an early step in rulemaking required by the Forest Practices Act, and we distribute draft rule language to the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife and the counties and tribes of the state in order for them to have an early opportunity to review rule language and to comment on the board's rule language in the early part of the entire rulemaking process. So I'll provide a brief background of where we've been and explain what we've accomplished since your August meeting. At the August meeting, the board directed staff to file a CR 101 pre-proposal statement of inquiry. This is the first step in rulemaking required by the Administrative Procedure Act, and it notifies the public that an agency is considering rulemaking on a particular subject. So the board's objective in doing this was to include forest biomass in the definition of forest practice in WAC 222-16010.
And this was to show that the removal of biomass on the forest floor is a forest practice and is subject to all the environmental protections that the rules provide. The board also directed staff to begin rule development, and in October 3rd, we held three meetings that included people that had expressed interest in participating, and we got very good participation with people representing all of the forest practices and interest groups. To briefly summarize the results of those discussions, there was general agreement that it is a good idea to include forest biomass in the definition of forest practice at this time. But to define the term forest biomass or to make any other changes in rule on this subject should only occur in an adaptive management process. Some participants expressed concern about the level of biomass removal activity that could take place in the future as the industry, as this market grows for this material. And many participants commented that they'd like to see the establishment of best management practices for Washington State to ensure ecological sustainability in the practice of removing biomass from the forest floor. As for the task of adding forest biomass to the definition of forest practice, there were two approaches discussed, and you may want to follow along on the definition that I provided to you in your board packet for what I'm about to say. But one of the ways discussed was to include forest biomass removal or forest biomass harvest in the list of activities listed under the lead-in sentence. So it would be listed along with the road construction and pre-commercial thinning, harvesting, reforestation, etc. And people that were in favor of doing it this way thought that that would indicate that the material allowed to be removed would only be materials that are byproducts of timber harvest, because timber harvest is the term that appears in the lead-in sentence. The other approach that was discussed was to insert forest biomass into the lead-in sentence itself, alongside to relating to growing, harvesting, or processing timber, so that the lead-in sentence would read, forest practice means an activity conducted on or directly pertaining to forest land and related to growing, harvesting, or processing timber or forest biomass, including but not limited to, etc. And staff is in favor of this approach because staff believes it gives DNR the clear ability to afford the same environmental protections for biomass harvest as is provided for timber harvest.
Good morning again. My job is to, discuss what we're really asking for and the staff recommendation. You've heard testimony that people do want to go to what is now being termed phase two, and that's the actual regulation of the harvest of biomass. I just want to remind the board that this rulemaking does not allow anything that's not already allowed, that the intent here in making this a forest practices activity is to know that the current protection of the carbon rule will be applied when people go out to harvest biomass, and that through all of the activities listed in the we list the activities there, road and trail construction, harvesting, pre-commercial thinning, that biomass can be a byproduct or a harvestable product within any of those activities. So we, in phase one, believe that making this a forest practices activity is not taking the next step, which is the actual regulation or determination of how to harvest, that it does not at this time need to go through adaptive management, but that instead making it a forest practice activity will allow the regions to consistently make it, or, you know, it'll be identified as a forest practice activity on the application, that they'll be able to classify that application based on the information given, and that will then have consistency across the region. Right now, As we said earlier in the present in past presentations, there's a lot of ways that this is being addressed, from salvage to just a mention in the statement as to what they're going to do on the ground. So with that, Gretchen.
Well, with that, we do request that you direct staff to distribute the 30-day notice. So we would distribute the proposed rule language for review and comment by the Department of Fish and Wildlife and the counties of the state and also the tribes.
I would move that.
Second.
All right, thank you. We have a motion properly supported to, and could you read the motion, please, Carolyn? That might be helpful.
Yeah. The motion. I move that the Forest Practices Board approve the draft rule proposal that amends WAC 222-16-010, including forest biomass and the forest practice definition, forest practice in quotes, for a 30-day review with the counties, Department of Fish and Wildlife, and tribes.
All right, thank you. Who seconded that, please? Okay, Norm, thank you for that. Dave, do you understand the motion?
Yes, sir, I do.
Okay, thank you. Is there a discussion on the motion? Pretty straightforward. Yes, Tom?
Just on behalf of the Department of Ecology, I want to, this is an asterisk rule, just want to state for the record that we concur with the staff recommendation and the motion.
Yes, Carol.
Some of the concerns that were expressed in the and some of the earlier testimony, would we get any help in the exclusion clause, where the last and the item in the series is and other forest products which cannot normally be expected to result in damage to forest soils, timber, or public resources? So would that be something that would address some of the concerns about soil issues, particularly soil issues, in management practices for biomass?
At this point, we don't have enough information to, under current practices, is that it is truly a byproduct that people are going out and removing within harvest units material for biomass. Again, this is an emerging industry. I mean, it's always maintained a presence, but people now are beginning to emphasize or look towards biomass as a more significant industry. We feel that the supply study, and I'm not sure, but I hope that they're looking at what materials would be removed as biomass, as well as how much is available, and considering the environmental protection or the sustainability in the environment. So right now, we are emphasizing the list that's in the rule, and that for the most part, the harvest of biomass is occurring during those activities.
I didn't answer my question.
We don't know.
Okay, I got it.
Yes, Dave.
Commissioner, I think you had said a little earlier that the DNR had looked at sites where this had been done. I think you said that very acceptably, and other sites that looked very alarming. So I guess for some of these things on the list, maybe all of them, there's standards for road building, timber harvesting, things like that. What I'm a little unclear about is what makes one site acceptable and one site alarming. How do we get at those things?
Yes.
Well, and I think, in all frankness, that's a good question, but that's not what's before us right now. This motion is to include biomass as a forest practice. It does not attempt the harder issue, which is to address your question, which is what is an ecologically sustainable method of retrieval, and perhaps what is not. And some of the public have commented today about the need to have either a discussion or initiate rulemaking to address that issue. So we're just, this motion is only to establish it as a forest practice, which is merely the prelude for the next step.
So in those, just to follow up, so we can provide those kinds of comments in this comment period?
Well, we could provide those comments if we were to go forward with rulemaking, or, as some have suggested, we start a less formal process of dialogue amongst the forest and fish principals about what we intend to do. Those are kind of two paths. But I would suggest that we discuss that after we get this done, and perhaps after lunch.
Commissioner, I think perhaps David Herrera is talking about during the 30-day review and comment period that the tribes would be able to give any comments they please, actually, in
sure.
that period of time, so certainly.
Yeah, we'll take all comment, but it's but hopefully you understand the relevance here.
No, I understand.
Okay, great.
So I just wanted to clarify that our intent is to maybe revisit some of the questions that were raised during public comment period after lunch, after this motion is over. So when we're done voting on the motion, we're sort of not done talking about the topic in general.
That would be my hope.
Okay.
Second.
Okay.
Well, let's stick to the motion for now, please. Okay. Are any further discussion on this motion? Yes, Norm.
Just want to say that we definitely support the inclusion of the change in the definition to include forest biomass, and that does then ensure that the removal of that biomass is fully regulated under our forest practices system, that all of the stream protection rules apply, all of the large woody debris protection rules apply, all of the protections of public resources that are currently in our rule apply to the removal of forest biomass. And just in case there was any doubt, that is the way that the department is regulating it right now. Even though there may be a need to clarify in rule, certainly the department is doing this as we speak.
That's good to hear.
And we support that.
It sounds to me like you have first-hand knowledge.
I do. and it was a good first-hand knowledge. Yes, it was very much a positive thing. And just, you know, putting it into rule clarifies that they will be doing exactly what they're doing today.
Any further questions? All right. I'll call for a vote on the motion. All those in favor, raise your hand, please. Dave, how do you vote?
Aye.
Thank you. It's unanimous. So thank you very much for the presentation. And at this point, it is nearly noon, so I'm going to call for a recess. For lunch, we'll reconvene sharply at 1 o'clock. Thank you.
I don't care how many you
want. I actually would prefer to have some more questions. I'm trying to worry about it.
Yeah.
first.
I'll talk about the staff. That's a good idea.
Right, because the services are, as they say, the way I understand it, is another part of the